Chapter 35. 10 minutes after Sandecker conversed with Pitt, the Admiral was staring at Hiram Yeager in abject incredulity. "Are you sure about this? Your data must be in error." Yeager was immovable. "Max is not infallible 100% of the time, but on this one I believe she's right on the mark." "It's beyond belief," said Gunn, reading over Max's projections. Sandecker slowly shook his head, jarred by what he read. "You're saying the tunnels were built to divert the south equatorial current, which would in turn cause the temperature of the Gulf Stream to drop. According to Max's computer model, 8 degrees by the time it reaches Europe." Gunn looked up from the data files. "The effects on European climate would be cataclysmic. The entire continent would go into a deep freeze for 8 months out of the year. Let us not forget the effect of the Gulf Stream on the east coast of the United States and the maritime provinces of Canada," added Sandecker. "Every state east of the Mississippi and along the Atlantic shore could suffer a cold as bitter as that in Europe." Gunn said sarcastically, "Now there's a happy thought." "The Atlantic Drift's warm surface water is controlled by temperature and salinity," Yeager explained. "As its tropical waters move north, it mixes with the cold water coming down from the Arctic, where it becomes dense and sinks southeast of Greenland. This is called a thermohaline circulation. Then it gradually warms again and rises to the surface as it reaches Europe. The Gulf Stream's sudden drop in temperature could also cause the thermohaline circulation to collapse, a state that would accent the crises and last for several centuries." "What would be the most immediate results of such an event?" asked Sandecker. Yeager spread several papers across Sandecker's desk and began quoting the data. "Death and disruption would run rampant. In the beginning, thousands of homeless people would die from frostbite or hypothermia. Many more thousands might also die when the heating supplies quickly disappear because of the staggeringly high demand. All vital river traffic would come to a standstill, locked in ice. Ports would freeze throughout the Baltic and the North Sea, stranding ships carrying oil and liquefied natural gas used for heating, not to mention millions of tons of food imported from other countries. Most agriculture yields would be cut in half. Food shortages would be magnified because of the shortened growing season. Auto transportation would come to a halt because of freezing road conditions and heavy snowfall and a lack of fuel. Airports and railroads would be paralyzed for weeks at a time. People would be more susceptible to colds, flu, and pneumonia. Tourism would vanish overnight. The European economy would go into complete chaos with no end in sight. And that's only half the story." "So much for French winemaking and Dutch tulips," Gunn muttered. "What about the gas sent through the pipelines from the Middle East and Russia?" said Sandecker. "Can't the flows be increased to alleviate the suffering?" "A drop in the bucket when you calculate the demand, not to mention the electrical power shortages that would come with severe winter storms. Max estimates at least 30 million homes throughout Europe would be left without heat." Gunn looked up from taking notes. "You said that was only half the story." "Further disruption and misery would come with the rising temperatures in the late spring," Yeager continued. "This terrible scenario would be enhanced by heavy rains and high winds. Violent and massive flooding will be the result. Rivers swelled by massive amounts of melted snow would burst their banks and flood thousands of cities and towns, destroying vital bridges as well as millions of homes. Avalanches and mudslides would bury entire towns and destroy vast stretches of highway. The loss of life following such an appalling cataclysm cannot be imagined." Gunn and Sandecker remained silent for a few moments. Then Sandecker broke the silence. "Why?" he asked briefly. Gunn spoke the single thought on everyone's mind. "What do Spectre and the Red Chinese have to gain by such an atrocious scheme?" Yeager showed the palms of his hands in a helpless gesture. "Max has yet to come up with an answer." "Can it be Spectre controls the gas coming into Europe?" queried Sandecker. "We asked the same question and ran profiles on all the major gas producers that supply the continent," replied Yeager. "The response was negative. Odyssey has no natural gas or oil holdings anywhere in the world. The only minerals in which Spectre has an interest is a group consisting of platinum, palladium, iridium, and rhodium. For those, he owns the major deposits and producing mines in South Africa, Brazil, Russia, and Peru. He'd have a monopoly on the world's reserves if he could gain control of the Hall mine in New Zealand that produces as much as the other countries put together. But the mine's owner, Westmoreland Hall, has refused all offers to sell. If I remember my high school chemistry class, Sandecker said slowly, platinum is used mostly for electrodes like automobile spark plugs and jewelry. It's also in high demand in chemistry laboratories because of its high resistance to heat. I fail to see a connection between his mining operations and his plot to send Europe back to the glacial age. There has to be a rationale, said Gunn. The return on investment for digging those tunnels would have to be astronomical to pay for the excavation. If he doesn't profit from the demand in energy, what can he possibly gain? Sandecker turned and stared thoughtfully out his window down at the Potomac River. Then he turned back and looked at Jaeger. Those pumps, fed by the immense water pressure, could they be used to supply electricity? If so, they'd produce enough energy to power most of Central America. Jaeger said Pitt's report made no mention of generators. He and Giordino would have certainly recognized the power source when they saw one. Sandecker stared through his authoritative blue eyes at Gunn. You're aware of the mischief those two want to carry out? No, I'm not. Gunn stared back at Sandecker, unintimidated. I was under the impression that they're on a flight back to Washington. There's been a change in plans. Oh? They advised me that they were going to make a clandestine inspection of a secret installation Odyssey has built on an island in the middle of Lake Nicaragua. Did you give your permission? Gunn asked, with an astute grin. Since when did you know them to take a no answer from me? They just might come up with some answers to our dilemma. Maybe, Sandecker said grimly. They also may get themselves killed.